You can listen to The Professional Left wherever you get your podcasts, on Netroots Radio, or at our website, proleftpod.com, where you can also contribute to this podcast. There is a PayPal button at our website, or you can mail us a letter and or contribution at P.O. Box 9133, Springfield, Illinois, 62791.
This is the podcast for April 7th, 2023. It's not safe for work.
Recorded live from the Cornfield Resistance, where the most important election in the country, the race for the mayor of Springfield, Illinois, has once again gone unreported by the national media. Shame on them. It's the Professional Left with Driftglass and Blue Gal.
The humongous upset, Driftglass.
It was a blowout.
Over 700 votes.
Yes.
Mayor Langfelder.
Gone, but not forgotten.
No, and he'll still be around. He's not going to move to Florida.
And there was apparently a lot of stuff going on behind the scenes involving campaign financing.
I heard that there was his one comment. He's politics in Springfield, Illinois.
It's weird.
Municipal politics.
Uh-huh.
First of all, the town is pretty much run by real estate agents.
Yes.
Secondly, people play nice because there's state money and federal money flowing through the coffers. And everybody knows that Democrats pretty much run the show, and Republicans want to get something done, they have to play nice. And Democrats, because they run the show and have a supermajority, really have no reason to be nasty unless they're provoked. And then they aren't provoked very much in municipal politics. I mean, sometimes, but
yeah.
So the concession speech from our mayor was pretty, you know, we were surprised, but these things happen and this is politics. And then he said, and with the amount of money flowing through my opponent's campaign.
Uh-huh. A lot of money.
A lot of money, apparently.
A lot of money and a lot of, I think, ill will. A lot of people who had been dismissed from government for one reason or another.
Lost their jobs. Right.
Or, like, good reasons and bullshit reasons found their voice in the opposition. Like, now we're taking him down. Plus, there was, like, no mention of his name in the literature that Democrats were passing out in the area.
Because
everyone would just look at them like, what the hell, man? What is wrong? And the biggest question, at least among the crowd I hang out with, was he never got along with the state government.
Yeah.
Never reached out to them. There's no City of Springfield lobbyist specifically focused on. And the money.
He never had his picture taken with the governor.
Dude.
Ever.
The money that comes through Illinois flows through the state capitol, which is literally
vest pocket.
Right. Well, no, the federal money that comes through the state comes through the state government.
Right.
Springfield is the capital of the state. And it is insane that the mayor of the city of Springfield has no relationship with the people who run the state and doesn't want one, apparently.
I shrug my shoulders. This is the Driftglass shrug you're hearing.
There's money on the table right now the city could be using to do good things, and it's not because I don't know why. I have no idea why. It's a mystery. It's a great old mystery.
And the community organizers that you have 7:30 a.m. meetings with don't know why either.
They're all scratching their heads going, what is wrong with this place? What the hell? And there's theories, and I'll share them with you some other day over a beer, perhaps. But
there's a former mayor who, you know, didn't want the Summerfest concert to go until after 9:30.
Right.
Because, you know, people got to sleep. And that's going to welcome a lot of young people. Everyone in Springfield wonders why all the young people leave.
Yeah, except the young people, you know, would tell them if they would listen. Yeah. You know, they're pretty. As I recall, we used to have a young lady lived in this house who was on the mayor's advisory council.
Right.
Who was not shy about telling him what he should be doing.
What young people want downtown.
Yeah.
And sorry, it's got to be over by at least 9:15.
No, got to roll it up. I don't mean to shit talk the place where I live. There's a lot of things going for it, but I mentioned at a meeting earlier in the week among people that I hang out with that it does remind me a lot of academic feuds. You know, they're so vicious because the stakes are so low.
Everything
here is so panniatty, is so small town. You can isolate it to the one guy or these three guys. It's not institutional. It's these small group of people who are not real good at running a town, kind of arguing over petty shit and nothing else gets done.
Right.
And everyone else is wandering around going, how do we make this stop? What do we do about this? And the answer is, you know, there's a lot of answers, but the voters, by and large, don't seem to be interested in those things. So
no.
Here we are. Shall we leap into what I understand a lot of other things happened during the last
a lot of other things happened so? This week. I want to mention to people who wrote to us and tweeted us and asked us on other social media sites if we were okay during the tornadoes in Sangamon County.
Yes.
We had to go to the basement for 15 minutes.
Yep.
Driftglass grabbed the box with everybody's birth certificate in it and his laptop and made sure that I got downstairs, which stairs aren't my friend. So he got me down the stairs and then we waited and it was very quick and there were no funnel clouds near us or in our neighborhood. Other people were not so lucky. But we're really grateful when things like that happen and our county is in the news and all of a sudden we get all these messages of, are you okay? Are you okay? And we realize, oh, we kind of have an extended family out there in podcast land who really care about us. And it's humbling and comforting at the same time. So thank you for asking.
The most important part of the story, of course, is that the kids herded all the cats into the basement.
They went back upstairs to get the cats.
Save the cats.
Well, and if we'd just been down there another 4 minutes, all the cats would have come down to see what was going on.
And the sirens went off twice. So it was kind of a rough night.
Yep.
We're fine.
It was a much rougher night for other people in the area,
too. It really
was. Yeah.
It really was. But, you know, we have a nice, cozy little house and we have a good basement and we were perfectly safe. The street did half fill with water, not as bad as it used to, but it did half fill with water. It was just a storm, you know, and we did fine. But it was a matter of letting everyone know we're not going to be around for a few minutes because we have to go down to the basement because tornado on the way is not, it's not a watch.
Not a drill either. Right. And the sirens went off and it's time to go to the basement. It really was. Okay. Yeah. You could tell. I want to say hi to my dad. My dad, after the storms passed through, my dad came from Pittsburgh for a weekend. He's never been to this house before. My mom was not a traveler, but she passed away several years ago. And my dad's finally feeling like traveling. And he came and visited and got to spend time with all three grandchildren.
Yes.
And see our tiny house. We're sitting around the dining room table with three young adults and the two of us and my dad. And my dad says, how can you live in this little house and not kill each other? I said, well, Dad, there is an upstairs. And that was it. I mean, you know, but it was the dining room table felt a little bit more cramped. We don't very often have six people around the dining room table. So
it was
a little close quarters. Anyway.
Well, we've done local politics and weather.
Yes, there was a lot of news this week. And especially we want to note that indictment thing came down mere minutes after we recorded our show last week.
And honestly, if you want the best entertainment value for your dollar, listen to this this podcast because we're the best entertainment value. But the very best entertainment value for your dollar is going and listening to all of the professional, political, usually Democracy Alliance, Never Trump podcast, etc., that all dropped just before the indictment came out. Because they're all like, this is never going to happen. They're all going to go on summer break and Alvin Bragg's going to just take the summer off. This is going to drag on forever. Oh, my God. What are we going to do? They're all going to leave. Yes.
My sources are telling me August at the earliest.
And we're sitting there and you know, we make some predictions here, but, you know, professionally, we don't have anybody who's tapped into the New York DA's office or the political universe of Washington, D.C. And we're like, you know, well, whatever happens, happens. But these people were just bitching and moaning about how it's never going to happen. 100%. These are all the same people that, you know, Hillary's going to win. So go ahead and vote for Trump.
Right.
It's a joke. Yeah. Just maybe shut up now for a while. Because nothing happening here is under your control. And this sort of leads into the complete media failure around the indictment of Donald Trump. Wall-to-wall bullshit. I mean, you know, I was tuned into the station that was staking out LaGuardia Airport baggage claim to see how many overnight bags did he bring. Maybe some of them have documents in them. is there evidence of cocaine use? We don't know. And it was embarrassing. But, you know, I believe you'd like to speak further on this subject, Mike.
I would. I said something on social media about this indictment. And what I said was, I'll never get over that Hillary had plans to help adults with autism. Trump paid bribes and white guys stole her emails. So fuck adults with autism, I guess. Because power is about people who can pay. This was election fraud, and he should go to jail for it.
Yes, he should.
And I said to you, my prediction between the two of us was tax evasion.
Yeah.
And we learned last night from, who was it? Ackerman.
One of the many
Ackerman?
Oh, yes. Spencer Ackerman.
Spencer Ackerman. That the tax evasion laws are such that you really have to prove that you've defrauded the government of massive amounts of money in your tax. What Alvin Bragg did instead, which is what a lot of DAs do, is filed false records, business records, in an effort to engage in tax evasion, which is also against the law, and it's also a felony. We're learning a lot about all these like little levels of what a DA can charge you with and what's a felony. And this is something that just drove my ex-husband crazy, because as far as he was concerned, the DAs and the FBI had all the cards every time. They didn't want to, if they couldn't charge you with actually stealing a baby and they thought you stole a baby, they would make it racketeering. You know, and they'll just put a racketeering charge on it. They don't have the baby. They don't know you took it. They have no evidence. They'll just say racketeering and then they've got you. Or if they ask you and you hem and haw a little bit about stealing the baby, they'll just say you lied to the FBI and then they've got you. And it would, and this was from a defense attorney's, you know, perspective,
right.
The FBI will just charge you. The idea of indicting a ham sandwich, you know, everybody's making jokes about that. But it's not the ham sandwich. It's the charge against the ham sandwich. They can charge you with RICO. They can charge you. They'll just make stuff up. And they have all of the cards with which they can charge you. But the fact is, Donald Trump did this how many times?
Yeah.
34. Excuse me. I had my numbers mixed up. 34 different times that Alvin Bragg has investigated, and the grand jury. Let's never forget that this is a grand jury indictment of citizens of the state of New York looking at the evidence and saying, yes, there is enough evidence to charge this defendant with crimes. Anyway, not that that matters to Marjorie Taylor Greene, who came to New York City.
She did. She got a trip to the big
city. She got a trip to the big city.
Bad,
and she said
bad.
It was stinky. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, stinky. Stinky.
Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez had something to say to her about that. You know, who stunk it up, right? And then she got kissed in the SUV by her Right Side Broadcasting Network boyfriend,
who
is also seen often taking and putting suitcases into the $96,000 SUV she paid for with campaign funds.
He's a kept man.
But he kissed her on the air. Ah, he forgot he was, I guess, doing his job or not or whatever. I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
And she didn't know why more people hadn't shown up. She couldn't answer that question for Trump
in
New York City.
Yeah. Well, and one of the news shows did a breakdown of the number of voters who voted for Trump in Manhattan.
Mm-hmm.
It's like 1% of the people who voted for Trump in Manhattan showed up at the courtroom and waved their little flags. And it was nothing. It was nothing.
Mm-hmm.
It was a criminal getting marched into court to be charged with his crimes, and then he went home. That's all it was.
Mm-hmm.
But by the way, a quick shout out to the Brad blog and Bradcast and Desi and Brad and Digby that I was on with this week after the indictment, right after the indictment, like minutes later. And my only substantive addition, other than trying to be make funny little jokes and say what Digby said, was I think what's significant is like the scene from Moneyball where the owner of the Red Sox is telling Brad Pitt, you know, the first guy through the fence always gets bloody.
Mm-hmm.
Always. The first guy to do some new thing is always going to get crapped all over, which is basically the story of the entire liberal blogosphere.
Yeah.
The first people to come out against all the bullshit from the Republicans in the 90s and the 2000s and the Iraq War, all the way up to Trump, the first people who got it right early always get dumped on and hated by the people who control the establishment.
Right.
They don't want the establishment to change. But Alvin Bragg has broken the seal.
Yeah.
He's opened the book. And now it's like, oh, and the other thing it did remind me of in a reverse way is there's a scene from Nicholas and Alexandria where Tsar Nicholas and his family have been taken hostage by the Bolsheviks. And it's got, and the amount of latitude that they're allowing the royal family, who are presumed to be gods on earth, get smaller and smaller and smaller, but they're still treated with respect. And I think a guard attacks one of his daughters, and the czar pulls the guy away, and the guy slaps him. And everyone gets real quiet, and there's a whisper. He slapped the czar, mm-hmm. And they look around and nothing happens. God doesn't strike them dead. He's not a god. He's just a man. He's just a guy. And you can slap the czar and nothing happens to you.
You can walk through a door in front of Trump and let the door hit him in the face. And nothing happens to you.
Nothing happens to you. Yeah. He's just a petty, vicious, doddering, incontinent, Adderall-addicted criminal.
Yes.
And he's now he's going to have to pay for some of that. Not all of it, because the debt he owes to the world and this country and civilization is so huge and unpayable.
He can't afford to flee the country.
No.
He can't. He literally can't afford to flee the country. Yeah.
There's no amount of taking away from him that will make up for what he's done to this country.
Not to my adult son with autism. Nope.
But there's some accountability coming. There's a moment where we realize, oh, it's just an asshole who got caught. Okay. Yeah. Let's let justice do its thing. And let's let the other indictments just come right down the river, like
and the rape
down
charge. The rape trial is next week. So
also this week, speaking of artificial intelligence, people did make a big deal on social media that ChatGPT did a flawless imitation of Peter Baker.
Well, Peter Baker is a GPT.
He is. And I just rolled my eyes and said, look, there's 9 lines of algorithmic code that's been cranking out David Brooks columns for 20 fucking years. There's nothing to this. You know, you don't need an entire AI system to imitate op-ed columnists of that caliber.
It is easier to find the razor in the apple, for you and I to find the razor in the apple in a David Brooks column than to do the Monday New York Times crossword.
To do the junior jumble. Yep. You know, it's not that hard because it's all so predictable. It's all written in blocks of prefabricated thought that you just assemble in different orders. So, you know, way to go, ChatGPT. You did a great imitation of Peter Baker. Good on you. But really, you got to do something more to impress me. Do a good imitation of Yul Brynner.
I know that this is later on in our show, but I kind of want to combine both the failure that was 60 Minutes in having Marjorie Taylor Greene on.
Yeah, that was really
and
bad.
And the decision by MSNBC to not air Donald Trump's speech live.
Yeah.
And Rachel Maddow making a statement that it is not newsworthy, his litany of complaints that he always has the same ones, and he's not making any news. So, and even then, after that speech, that Lawrence had his show, had a show, not just the giant panel that they had on Indictment Day, but he had his own show, and he did not air a moment of it. No. He read two or three lines from it so that his panel could comment. And their comment was, yeah, I would never, ever, ever in a billion years put Donald Trump on the stand. Are you kidding me?
No.
That's how you lose. But that was a very wise decision. And then this Leslie Stahl profile of Marjorie Taylor Greene as if calling Democrats pedophiles is somehow just not nice. You know, you really might want to be nice. Be more nice about that, but okay, moving on.
Yeah, she disgraced herself and her profession and CBS by giving Marjorie Taylor Greene a full 60 Minutes platform to spread lunacy and hate with no pushback, virtually no pushback. And this is a quote from Laura Clausen at Daily Kos, and there was a lot like this, but this sums it up pretty well, if I may quote her directly.
Yes.
Quote, Representative Marjorie Taylor Greene is moving closer to the center of power in the Republican Party, and the media's inevitable but unforgivable response to that is not to point out the extremism of the Republican Party, but to normalize Greene. 60 Minutes went all in on that Sunday night, abasing itself to the idea that if Greene is powerful in a major political party, she is worth giving a respectful hearing without significant pushback. God. Leslie Stahl may have been a reporter, producer, and interviewer for longer than Greene had been alive, but she was not ready to handle this. When a television news show segment on a political figure intersperses interview questions about her insistence that the opposing political party is a, quote, party of pedophiles, with clips of her working out and looking at family pictures, the intent was never to take her extremist views in any way seriously. And while Stahl's questions sort of gestured towards follow-ups on a few occasions, there was no serious challenge present. Nothing Greene couldn't lazily wave off and keep going. It was disgraceful.
She should be forced to resign. Leslie Stahl should no longer be working for CBS.
And I... I am reminded of a future episode of No Fair Remembering Stuff. The free plug I'm putting in here, please, No Fair Remembering Stuff, was when the Jeff Gannon scandal
broke. Oh, yeah.
And she was on with Bill Maher, as I recall.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And they were both like, damn, can you believe this? Why didn't anybody ever question his credentials? And where was the media? And why didn't the Secret Service this and that and this and that? And somebody, probably a liberal blogger, pointed out, hey, Leslie Stahl, you're a fucking reporter. Why didn't you report the story? Yeah. Why are you asking why didn't other people? Why aren't other people? This is your job. You're a big time reporter. Why aren't you doing the story instead of going on Bill Maher asking why other people aren't doing the job?
This podcast is you and I, Driftglass. Nobody else. No one else works for us. How many people work for 60 minutes?
Everybody. You know, they have a staff of thousands or hundreds at least.
As you said, Phil Donahue was fired for less than that. And as far as 60 minutes is concerned, Dan Rather was fired for less than that.
Yeah.
She should not be working there anymore.
Well, you had a question about who in their right mind would work there for free, for nothing, like, you know, liberal bloggers do.
Yeah, a lot of people. A lot of people would work there as an intern for 6 months to put it on their resume. A lot of people.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of very smart people would compete to do that. And I'm sure they have unpaid interns working there. You and I, Driftglass, have you and I. That's it. That's the only two people working on this show. And she has a staff of unlimited, unpaid interns willing to do her beck and call. And this is the product she puts out.
It is the oldest ongoing television news show in America, other than, I think, Meet the Press, which is also mm-hmm. garbage at this point.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it just tells you so much about how far the media has fallen
mm-hmm.
and how much it's like, nope, we got the memo. Everything has to be clicks and eyeballs and viewers. And the thing is, people boycotted that show. Viewership was way, way, way down because they're like, Jesus Christ. I mean, this is someone who should appear on Newsmax and Fox News. And you're giving her a featherbed platform on the most prestigious show you have.
Mm-hmm.
And you don't mm-hmm. use it as an opportunity to expose the problem that this woman has a knife to the throat of your profession.
And democracy.
Yeah. She's out to destroy the thing that makes your job possible. And you're basically just shrugging it off and moving on to the next question. It's embarrassing. And there's no one around us to tell them otherwise, apparently. So,
well, and that's hopefully the guys playing golf in the suits upstairs at CBS mm-hmm. saw those ratings because that's the only thing they care about.
So way to go, MSNBC, for not doing any of this.
No, exactly.
We'll give you credit for that.
One time. Yeah. One time not doing any of that. Right.
Shall we talk a little bit about No Labels again? We talked about it a little bit last week. It is kind of cool that some of the very slow on the uptake influencer types in the media are starting to notice that, hey, this No Labels thing is both really dangerous and a grift being run by grifters, which is really cool because, like, hey, that's great. Welcome to the party, pal. That's wonderful that you noticed that. Once again, you know, the liberal blogosphere and the Driftglass blog and this podcast were on this beat a decade ago, back when it was Joe Scarborough and David Brooks, and it was very respectful and like, well, we really should have maybe a third alternative, a problem-solving, middle-of-the-road, centrist people, because that's what both parties want, you know? These extremes, they're going to do us in. This is from the Washington Post. Quote, No Labels group raises alarm with third-party presidential preparations. It has money and name-brand political backers and declines to describe either President Biden or Donald Trump as acceptable candidates. Oh, great. We're going back to the let's disrupt everything, Matthew Dowd, both sides are terrible days. Isn't that nice? That's 2016. That all worked out well for everyone. Back to the article. Former Senator Joe fucking Lieberman, the effing is not in the original article, I should tell you, knows better than most the impact third-party bids can have on presidential elections. His 2000 Democratic campaign for vice president fell just 537 votes short of victory in Florida, in a state where Ralph Nader, the liberal activist and Green Party nominee, won more than 97,000 votes. But that didn't stop. The Connecticut Democrat turned independent from joining a meeting Thursday in support of plans by the centrist group, bullshit centrist bulk group, No Labels, to get presidential ballot access lined up in all 50 states for 2024. The group called its effort an insurance policy against the major parties, plural, nominating two, plural, unacceptable candidates next year. Asked if President Biden, his former Senate colleague, would be unacceptable, Lieberman said the answer was uncertain. Quote, no decision had been made of any of that, but we're putting ourselves in a position, Lieberman said. And that's the end of that quote.
A position to raise money for my salary from credulous billionaires.
Yeah. Well, and just as a side note to this story, we ties it up in a neat little bow, just occurs to me. One person who doesn't work for them anymore, I believe, is Mark Halperin. Mark Halperin was like their accountant or something for a while. Was clearly, we need to give Mark Halperin a lot of money because he was good to us back when he was somebody on the network. So they hired him. He wasn't there anymore. But you know where I did catch his act, Blue Gal?
Where?
I caught his act on indictment day at a little place called Newsmax.
Oh.
And he was sitting, I swear, in suit and tie and the Mark Halperin plastic haircut. And I swear he was wearing like pajama bottoms. Because he was sitting in this stark, white, looked abandoned room talking about, in his massive legal expertise, what to make of what was going on around him. And he reassured the Newsmax audiences on Zoom that, first of all, this is never going to come to trial. Secondly, Trump, and this, the word he used was masterful, Trump will masterfully get around this bullshit. And you know what, Blue Gal? There are even liberals out there who think this is all just nonsense and should never have been brought. And they gave him a cookie, and he went back to bed. But that's what Mark Halperin's doing now.
Unnamed liberals. Yeah. Unnamed liberals in his head.
Liberals in the New York Times and Washington Post, Blue Gal. He didn't name them, of course, because they're imaginary. But yeah, because that's his job now. His job is to do exactly for Newsmax what he was doing on Meet the Press.
Morning Joe.
And Morning Joe all year after time, year.
Yeah.
Yep. It was polishing the knob of conservatives, telling them, don't worry, liberals are really the bad guys here. And we're going to get out of this. And then he gets a pat on the head, except the size of the cookie he gets now is much smaller than the cookie he would got when he was on Meet the Press and Morning Joe.
I don't see it in our notes, and maybe I'm refrigerator blind at this point, but I think it needs to be inserted here that Steve Bannon is trying to add some disruption to the Democratic nomination by having Robert Kennedy Jr. File papers to run for president as a Democrat.
Yep.
And get all the Democratic anti-vaxxer vote, out there in the Democratic primaries.
Great. Yeah, that's great. You do that.
Good luck with that, Steve. Democratic primaries and anti-vaxxers. Haven't all the anti-vaxxers left the Democratic Party by this time, I would imagine.
I'm kind of focused on the sadness of Robert Kennedy Jr.'s brain.
Yeah, it is sad. It's very sad.
Yeah. I had dinner with him once 20 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
And he was good company. And we talked about a book that we both enjoyed. And I was in a place where everyone there made 100,000 times more than I ever did.
Right, right.
But they were all very nice. And it was a lovely conversation. That's the only connection I have with that family or that person. But
And he has children with severe medical conditions. You know, speaking as someone who has child with medical conditions, being passionate about that, I have no problem with.
Right.
It's going in the direction that he was misled. Mm-hmm. That is just tragic.
Yeah.
And
you can see in that pathology that it can happen to anyone.
Right.
You know,
right.
You're so desperate for a villain. You're so desperate for an explanation that you're willing to take a small step in the wrong direction, then a larger step in the wrong direction, then suddenly you're committed to a trajectory that's going to end you up being promoted by Steve Bannon as a Democratic alternative to Joe Biden.
Right.
Real sad. Very, very sad.
So just getting back to the overall election day this week, we had some big progressive wins in Wisconsin and in Chicago.
Yeah.
Surprising win in Chicago from my perspective. Everyone was suggesting that it wasn't going to go that way.
Nope.
It's like the Midwest has liberals in it, Driftglass.
I know.
Mm.
Isn't that weird?
Now, I would like to join with my conservative friends across the aisle, Driftglass, who are somehow so very upset that, as one Newsmax Chiron put it, Soros wins in Wisconsin.
Yeah, that's exactly what happened. That is exactly what happened. And in Chicago. Soros won in Chicago.
Soros wins everywhere.
Right.
Number one. I share this link on Twitter fairly frequently. If you go through my Twitter stream, you'll see it as long as I'm on Twitter for however long that lasts. Soros has a business relationship with Jared Kushner. Jared Kushner considers George Soros a partner on a couple of projects.
Mm-hmm.
So answer me that. Number two, How about some campaign finance reform?
Hey, I'm all for it.
Fellow concerned citizens about all the Soros money being dumped in our elections. Let's reverse Citizens United together. We could work on that together.
We could.
Together.
We could be like a problem solvers caucus, Blue Gal.
Well, it reminds me of the time that I went on Pammy Atlas's blog.
Right.
And went in her comment threads where everyone was bent out of shape that Obama was going to know which library books you took because of the Patriot Act.
Right.
And that's they just right. wanted to reverse the Patriot Act when a Democrat was in the White House.
Right.
The rest of the time, when George W. Bush spied on us, it was fine. But when, you know, the Kenyan wanted to look at things, that's terrible.
That's the end of civilization. Yep.
Yeah. So if you want to get George Soros's billionaire money out of the political process, just remember you're going to have to get the Uline's money out of the political process too.
Oh no! Well, and remind people of what the conservatives at Pammy Atlas's blog said to you.
Literally said, "I'm fine with it if it's George W. Bush."
Yeah, I trust him. I don't trust.
Yeah,
Obama.
I don't trust Obama.
Oh,
that's it.
I see.
There's
so,
no principle whatsoever.
No.
And I thought it would make great headlines for a blogger named Blue Gal
right.
to go and do a joint press release with Pammy Atlas about how we don't want the Patriot Act.
Right.
We think it's against the First Amendment to the Constitution. Our constitutional rights are being violated by an overarching, nosy government that reacted too quickly to 9/11.
Mm-hmm.
And it's time to dial it back, you know.
Let's all get on board with that.
Yeah, let's do it. And I would be happy to stand there with Pammy Atlas. You know, I'm twice her weight and old and don't have all of her cosmetics and glamour, but that's okay. I'm the liberal blogosphere and she can be Pammy Atlas and Pamela Geller.
Mm-hmm.
And we won't agree on anything else, but we agree. We could do a YouTube together saying the Patriot Act has to go. Well, let's do that with campaign finance reform.
Hey, look, if Nancy Pelosi can do a video with Newt Gingrich about climate
sitting on a park bench with Newt Gingrich about climate change, that's right.
Fun fact, Gingrich has since bought that bench and burned it and swore it wasn't him. It was somebody
in oil.
Yeah, burned it in oil.
Crude oil.
and he's sworn it wasn't. It was like some Mission Impossible mask. It was like, no. That was Joe Biden in a Gingrich mask. I never said that or did that. That never happened.
That was Peter Graves.
Yeah.
You don't understand.
Well, no, it was Steny Hoyer. He was on the team.
Oh,
for just
Steny. Yes.
Like a minute, you know, but he was picked out by Peter Graves.
Yeah.
Anyway, shall we move on to Tennessee?
Yeah, we're talking about Donald Trump driving to the airport and driving back to the airport mm-hmm. and his plane taking off and landing and taking off and landing. Tennessee caught fire on gun reform.
Yeah, hell yeah.
And once again, youth lead the way. Please note that these kids in Wisconsin and Tennessee, Wisconsin voting for abortion rights, Tennessee, that these kids in Tennessee passionately protesting for their lives at the state house in Tennessee. These kids are going to vote for the Democratic Party for the rest of their lives.
Yes, they are.
If they don't get shot first.
Absolutely.
I'm sorry I have to say that, but that's what I have to say. Every time I hate to talk about this. It's so hard to talk about. It puts my stomach in knots to talk about it. I used to tell youngest child to drive carefully.
Right.
Now, I still tell her to drive carefully back to St. Louis, but I'm thinking in my head, don't get fucking shot.
Right. All the time. My mind, too. It's on my mind all the time, too. That's why I'm so like obsessive. This is a bit of an aside, but that's why I'm so obsessive about when you get back to campus and are safe in your room, make sure you text me. I don't care if it's 2 in the morning.
Right.
I need to know.
Text us when you're back locked in your room.
Yeah. And I need to know. And I know it's, you know. I know you're fine. I know you're fine. Yeah. You're going to be fine. But
you feel like the trip to the parking lot of her dorm is as dangerous as the walk from her car to her dorm.
Yeah, it's and I can see in my mind the clear, you know, parking lot. Everything's fine. I can also see like downtown Fallujah. You know? And it's just like and that trauma, that ongoing, contemptible, preventable trauma that Republicans are inflicting on children and their parents and their teachers and their families every fucking day because they worship a bloody God who is okay with sacrificing children. That trauma is going to come out the other end of that pipeline in a very, very harsh way.
Yeah. They're against going, you, against your political party.
Your political party is about to be run out of the country.
Yep.
Once these people get enough under their belt, enough years.
Critical mass. Power, yeah. Once they reach critical mass, you're gone.
And you will not just be a memory. You're not going to be the Whigs. Like, what do the Whigs do? No, you're going down as the Klan.
Right.
You're going down as the Confederacy that had to be burned out by the roots because you're so fucking evil. Plus, throw in abortion because we're not just taking your right to feel safe in your own campus away from you. We're taking your right to your own body away from you.
Yeah, and your economic future and your biological future and your ability to get surgery when the pregnancy is killing you.
Yeah.
Literally killing you.
And we're laughing about it. And we're celebrating. And
laughing about it.
And we're just going, yeah. And you know what? We might just take Obamacare away so you can't pay for any of it.
Oh, yeah. Well, we're going to take cancer screenings away from you because one of our judges decided to be an asshole.
Yeah. So, yeah.
And so you can just, yeah.
Speaking of abortion,
the people who are trusted by the Republican Party to analyze this stuff are in a panic today.
Oh, yeah.
Because of Tuesday. They see the writing on the wall the way you and I do. Mm-hmm. Not to quote Alex Alexander ever on this podcast, except he was in a panic Tuesday or Wednesday morning.
Yeah.
After Wisconsin. I don't see a path to 270 because they're going to do fair maps in Wisconsin. And they're going to prevent us from rewriting the laws so that the Republican legislature can pick their own electoral college delegates in Wisconsin. And if we can't do that, we won't win. So I don't see a path to 270, he says. And then Lincoln Project fellow John Schwepp tweeted, Republicans need to figure out the abortion issue ASAP. We are getting killed by indie voters who think we support full bans with no exception. Well, fuckwad. How many state legislatures are trying to pass that?
Mm-hmm.
Voters think that because you're actually doing it.
Yes. That's
why they think that.
One brief aside.
Yeah.
This kind of thing drives me crazy because in the same breath, and this is not the same person, but in the same breath, you will hear our allies talking about, you know, this whole Democrats insist on defunding the police thing is going to kill them. Like, there is one Democrat who ran on that. There are no Democrats who, you know, this Democratic insistence on seizing everyone's guns is just ridiculous. And Democrats have to, you know, this part of this is their problem. No, that's shit you made up or shit you took wildly out of context and then amplified using your giant megaphone into convincing your base that it really happened. And the mainstream media goes, oh, my God, Democrats want to get rid of the police. Well, that's a terrible idea. Let's pass that along. No, in this case, Republicans got exactly what they asked for.
Right.
They've been begging for half a century. You got just wanted, and you've been
saying.
What,
you fundraised off. Yes. Yeah. Yes.
And now it's like, oh, my God, so they're going to kill us and at the ballot box if they find out that we actually got what we really wanted and hold up to the entire party that supports this, the words that we have been saying to them for 50 years. Yeah. Anyway, I interrupted. I'm sorry.
And the former president and leading in the polls for your primaries candidate wants to defund the FBI and the DOJ. He said so Tuesday night.
It's
out
very
loud.
Yeah. Everybody can hear it. Well, not if you watched MSNBC.
Well,
but
here's what John Schwepp said. Republicans need to figure out the abortion issue ASAP. We are getting killed by indie voters who think we support full bans with no exceptions. Time for everyone to suck it up and unify behind Lindsey Graham's 15-week bill with exception. That's the play. The alternative is suiciding the pro-life movement. We are months away from that happening. I don't know what he means by suiciding the pro-life movement.
I don't know
what he means by that.
Aborting.
Cutting
it.
Them off. Yeah. But we are months away from that happening. Here's the deal. I didn't know that Lindsey Graham had a 15-week bill with exceptions.
Uh-huh.
But now I do. 15 weeks is pre-viability. That's what Roe v. Wade said.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
Roe v. Wade was 16 weeks, I believe. First trimester. Roe v. Wade, as I've said many times on this podcast, I'm tired of saying it. That was the compromise. 16 weeks, life of the mother. Those are the standards. That's why it lasted 50 years, fuckos, because it was the compromise. The Hyde Amendment, federal funds wouldn't go for it. It was legal up to 16 weeks with some exceptions for life of the mother and rape and incest and that sort of thing.
Mm-hmm.
That was the compromise. That's right. What It was. You fucked with that.
Uh-huh.
And now we have to get behind this. Or, no, just codify Roe.
Or we'll ruin the movement. The movement right. will be lost.
Well, your movement is ruined. Congratulations.
You know, what this reminds me of, I'll just change a few words and see if this sounds familiar. Time for everyone to suck it up and unify behind Ted Cruz. Because if Donald Trump gets elected, we're all screwed. Like, dude, it's too late. You rolled that ball down that hill and now it's a boulder and you can't get out of the way. No, this is the thing you set in motion to accomplish the thing that just happened.
You've been putting Photoshopped or whatever technology you had, pictures of so-called fetuses on envelopes for 50 years.
Right.
To this raise money for your campaign.
Oh, no. It'll ruin the movement. No, it'll ruin your fundraising. That's right. What you meant to say. Because you've been milking these idiots for their money for 50 fucking yeah. years.
Yep.
Now you got what you want. And why would they send you checks anymore?
Right, right. And Chicago has a new mayor. Would you like to talk about that for a moment?
Oh, just for a hot minute. Yeah. Apparently, Paul Vallis lost. And all the pundits who told me that could never happen because he was the sensible centrist were all wrong. And I will say that I did a back and forth on social media because there was a gentleman who was a Paul Vallis supporter on social media who said, you know, it's time to get out and vote for Paul Vallis before it's too late.
We remember that line.
And I said, and I told him on social media, somewhere Bernie Epton is laughing. And he said, okay, that's funny. You know, so he remembers who Bernie Epton was. He remember what Bernie Epton said.
Wow.
But this is not an exact replay because it never works out that way. But this is, once again, the progressive majority in Chicago uniting behind a progressive candidate who is not nearly as scary up close as he seemed in the ads to overcome a crazy guy who is not acceptable, who has been trying to get back to the top of the heap in Chicago for a long time, and nobody wants him there. So
that was the thing that amazed me, living with you and knowing from having the Chicago knowledge rub off on me that you have as much as has rubbed off. I knew from watching this from afar, 3 hours away, that nobody liked Paul Vallis.
No.
That nobody liked him.
No.
That his history in the city of Chicago was to destroy the school system.
Yes.
And nobody likes him for that. And it seemed clear to me that the national media covering however they covered it, you know, those people not from Chicago on Twitter saying, oh, it looks like it's going to be him.
Yeah.
Had no idea what Chicagoans thought about it and didn't bother to ask.
No, he's the sensible, centrist, older, white gentleman.
Yeah.
Who will pose with cops.
Yeah.
And who FOP, who has really serious problems in terms of violence and corruption and general political fuckery, who will stand arm in arm with them and who will get their support and get their nomination. And of course, the cops, apparently all the police are quitting now.
I heard they're all going to give up all their pensions and salaries and bonuses and everything and just quit.
And moving to Florida, where we're really taking care of Ron DeSantis loves people like us. They need guards at Disney, you know.
Go ahead.
Quote
this was a time when Dick Durbin's political pointer was way off as well, because he endorsed Vallis.
If I may quote Caddyshack.
Yeah.
The world needs ditch diggers, too. So, you know.
So are we worried about Brandon becoming the next Harold Washington, though?
I'd be thrilled if he'd become the next Harold Washington. Harold Washington was a very fine mayor who ran right up against a solid wall of bungalow belt white ethnic racism that everybody knew was there and nobody talked about out in public until a black guy won the primary, and then everybody freaked out and they all got behind 27 aldermen and all the crazy white people got behind the Republican Bernie Epton before it's too late. And Harold Washington,
we did a whole podcast about that.
We did.
Yeah.
And that is inherent in Chicago politics. There is it's a very lovely microcosm of the United States. There are, there's a whole strata of ethnic white racists in Chicago, and there always have been. Martin Luther King called it the most racist city in America, I think. That's where he got hit in the head with a brick. I mean, it's not a blue city. It is a vibrant city with a progressive / Democratic majority. There hasn't been a Republican mayor in Chicago since Al Capone's guy, Big Bill Thompson.
Right.
But the Dailies did not get elected by the progressives.
No.
You know,
no.
Papa Daly was famous for turning the microphone off of the one of the two progressives who would get up in council and argue with him. That's the veneer of the Blue City is completely taken apart once you get below the surface and find out, oh, this is a machine, turn of the century machine politics city.
Irish machine.
Goddamn right. Irish, Polish, Italian, you name it. And now it's got, oh my goodness, it's got Black people and Hispanic people and gay people and lesbians. And oh my God, they all want stuff. They all want their streets paved and they all want to go have good schools for their kids. And the way you divide that up is either by doing it fairly, which was what Washington was trying to do, or you have a spoil system. Mm-hmm. Where the white mm-hmm. neighborhoods get everything and the minority neighborhoods get nothing.
Right.
And that's what the mayor-elect Brandon promises, a more fair way, an equitable way of distributing the city's resources to the citizens of the city. And some people think that is called socialism. And some people think that's called common decency.
Socialism is when Black people get something.
That's right.
That's true.
Then there you go. You got the title of our podcast for this week. Miguel, congratulations.
Hey, Drift Class, let's do a news roundup. The Bidening continues. Roughly 6 hours after pleading not guilty to 34 counts of filing false business records, Donald Trump called the judge overseeing the case, quote, a Trump-hating judge with a Trump-hating wife and family, unquote. Judge Juan Merchan had asked Trump during his arraignment to, quote, please refrain from making statements that are likely to incite violence or civil unrest or jeopardize the safety or well-being of any individuals, unquote. Nevertheless, Trump went ahead and singled out Judge Merchan and Merchan's daughter, who is president of a digital campaign strategy agency that has worked with Biden, Harris, and other Democrats. Trump also called the Manhattan District Attorney Alvin Bragg a, quote, criminal, unquote, for, he claims, leaking information about the case.
Yeah.
Yeah. Who was going to get arrested on Tuesday? Who's been fundraising about this case since minute one?
Mike Pence of Hang Mike Pence fame will not appeal a court order requiring him to testify before the grand jury investigating Trump's efforts to overturn the 2020 election. So that'd be fun.
Wisconsin voters elected a liberal candidate to the state Supreme Court, flipping majority control from conservatives for the first time in 15 years. Janet Protasiewicz's victory means that the court is likely to reverse the state's abortion ban and end the use of gerrymandered legislative maps drawn by Republicans. Janet's victory also ended 15 years of conservative control of the Wisconsin Supreme Court.
And Charlie Sykes's legacy is finally dead.
Yep.
After losing like a loser, now former Wisconsin Justice and loser Daniel Kelly delivered a typically whiny, petulant, Trumpy concession speech calling Wisconsin Justice-elect Janet Protasiewicz, quote, beneath contempt and, quote, a serial liar. Quote, I wish that in a circumstance like this, I would be able to concede to a worthy opponent, but I do not have a worthy opponent. What a scumbag.
Job openings fell below 10 million in February for the first time since May 2021. There were 9.9 million job openings in February, down from 10.6 million in January. Meanwhile, 4 million workers quit their jobs in February, an increase from January, a sign of confidence that they can find a better job elsewhere.
Yeah. North Carolina Democratic state lawmakers switched party affiliations, giving Republicans a veto-proof supermajority in the state's legislature. Trisha Cotham claimed she had been bullied for not towing the party line, saying, quote, they have pushed me out. They made it very clear they do not want me. Cotham said the turning point came when she was criticized for using the American flag and prayer hands emoji on social media and on her vehicles. North Carolina Democrats want their fucking money back. No, North Carolina Democrats. Yes, they do. And Emily's List as well should grab her by the ankles and shake her until all the coins come out.
Mm-hmm.
Meanwhile, North Carolina Democrats called for Cotham's resignation for her deceit and betrayal. And both of those things are true.
And nobody gives a shit if she has praying hands on her bumper sticker.
No, that's an excuse to change parties.
Yep.
To be
somebody paid her.
To Tulsi Gabbard, you know,
right,
her colleague.
Right.
Yeah.
Elon Musk labeled NPR's Twitter account as, quote, state-affiliated media, unquote, a tag typically used for foreign media outlets that represent the official views of the government, like the Russian government-owned RT and the Chinese Communist Party's People's Daily Newspaper.
All right. I have to take Musk's side on that.
Yes.
Because if this country or this country's media has a state religion, it's both sides do it.
Mm-hmm.
And nobody does both sides bullshit better than NPR. So that's it really true. Is the state organ of the Beltway media in a certain sense. Other than that, yeah. It's all bullshit.
It doesn't speak for the government of Joe Biden and the Congress or Marjorie Taylor Greene. It doesn't speak for the government.
No, it speaks
for... But it sure does speak for the orthodoxy. Yes, it does. It
absolutely does. The Florida Senate approved a proposed ban on abortion after 6 weeks of pregnancy. The proposal must still be approved by the House before it reaches the desk of Governor Ron DeSantis, little D. Republicans, however, or are we still calling him Puddin' Fingers? I think Puddin' Fingers.
Puddin' Fingers.
Republicans, however, hold a supermajority in the legislature, and the bill is expected to pass.
Indy voters think that they want to end all abortion, Driftglass. I mean, that's killing us at the polls.
That's crazy.
It's because the state legislatures are doing it, like this one.
Why are these Indy voters reading the newspapers not listening to my propaganda on the state news network?
In other stories of Republican perverts in legislative office, the Kentucky Republican Party overrode the governor's veto of youth gender-affirming care. Kentucky's ban on gender-affirming care for minors, such as surgical procedures or the use of certain hormones, will not take effect until 90 days after the Kentucky General Assembly adjourns, according to the Legislative Research Commission. This means trans youth have until around late June to receive such care in the state, according to Kentucky's branch of the American Civil Liberties Union. The bill's bathroom ban for transgender students, what, they're just not supposed to go to the bathroom? Ban on teaching about gender identity in schools and allowance for teachers to not refer to students by their preferred pronouns, among other measures aimed at hating LGBTQ youth, will all go into effect immediately under an emergency provision. Amber Duke, executive director of the Kentucky ACLU, said in a statement that the organization plans to take the state to court over the law. Amen. This is one of the most extreme anti-transgender bills we've witnessed, even amid the historic wave of anti-LGBTQ legislation we've been fighting in states across the country over the last several years, said Troy Stevenson, director of state advocacy campaigns at the Trevor Project, a suicide prevention and crisis intervention organization for LGBTQ young people.
The NAACP Florida State Conference voted unanimously in favor of asking the NAACP Board of Directors to issue a travel advisory for the state of Florida. If issued, the advisory from the NAACP National would urge Black community members to avoid visiting or moving to the state of Florida. Wow. Board of Directors Chairman Leon W. Russell responded to this news with the following statement. Quote, "The recommendation from our Florida State Conference is a clear indication of just how egregious Governor Puddenfinger's actions are. Any attempt to intentionally erase or misrepresent Black history is a direct attack on the foundation of comprehensive education. Be clear, Black history is American history. We are proud of our Florida State Conference for meeting this moment with the equal aggression and intention that is a necessary response to these attacks. Any location in America where our history has been erased does not offer us or our children a bright future."
And no white person should visit Florida and take their vacation dollars to that state.
You know where you should visit? Illinois. Springfield. We've got a lot of cool stuff in Springfield. And there's a big city north of us just elected a new mayor. You might enjoy that as well.
We had a listener write me and say, what month is a good month to come for weather? This was while we're in the basement waiting for the tornadoes to go over.
Not today.
Yeah. It took me a while to figure out what month would be the best month to come to Springfield where it wouldn't be hot, hot, hot or cold, cold, cold. And I figured October.
Yeah.
October's pretty.
October's gorgeous here. And there's a lot of birthdays that you can come bring money and give it to people who are having birthdays.
There's certain birthdays.
It's great. And you know what? If you like winter stuff, there are people who actually enjoy the snow and ice skating and winter sports. Chicago's glorious in the winter. After a fresh snowfall,
Chicago
it's gorgeous.
Yeah.
It's
we don't get a lot of snow. We have St. Louis weather down here.
We do. We do.
We don't get a lot. We get maybe two or three snows a winter season, and it's gone.
Yeah.
It's gone one or 2 days later. Mm-hmm. So we don't have permanent snow on the ground in the wintertime. We don't. But it does get cold, certainly by southern standards. Anyway, Mississippi's GOP governor signed Confederate Heritage Month proclamation And he dated it April 31st, which is a day that does not exist on the calendar.
Yeah. Yeah. Ban those books, guys. Don't let those people learn in school. Don't let them see those calendars that contradict your teaching of the biblical length of April. That would be wrong. There's some local news that you might want to hear about. Here in Springfield, 2 days after the school massacre in Nashville, Springfield gun owners rallied to tell the world how much they love their guns and how no one's ever going to make them do anything they don't want to do. And they chanted, "Rittenhouse is a friend of
God." And you found this story. I want you to read it because it is hilarious.
I'm going to read the whole thing.
Sad, but hilarious.
This is from an outfit called CWB Chicago. The headline, "Trump bumper sticker helps Chicago cops crack anti-gay hate crime case, / prosecutor." And this is just such a wonderful story. I'm going to read the whole thing. Quote, "Chicago police identified the man responsible for a series of anti-gay hate crimes because he is the only person in the area who bought a bumper sticker showing Donald Trump urinating on Joe Biden's name, prosecutors said Thursday. That unusual detail about CPD's lengthy investigation was revealed during a bail hearing for Thomas Howard, age 62, on Thursday afternoon. Quote, I've taken ownership of what I've done, and I'm not proud of it, said Howard as he appeared before Judge Barbara Dawkins. Between May and January, Howard repeatedly targeted a family's home in the 5700 block of North Mason with anti-gay actions, Assistant State's Attorney Sarah Dale Schmidt said. Howard went on the family's porch twice last year in May and again in July to chop their pride flag in half, Dale Schmidt said. In the latter incident, he, quote, flipped off the family's security camera. A few months later, he sprayed their rainbow flag with stain from a super soaker. Time after time, he left, quote, right-wing political notes and stickers on the family's home as surveillance cameras recorded him, said Dale Schmidt, not the smartest guy you've ever met. Mm. Even though Howard lived less than a block from the family's home, it just gets better. Nobody recognized him, even after media reports spread news of the crime last autumn. After supporters helped the family paint over hateful messages he left on their garage last fall, Howard allegedly returned to paint creeps, weirdos, and POS Dems on the property. To cap it off, he slapped a bumper sticker, oh, it's so sweet, on the family's garage that showed former President Donald Trump urinating on President Joe Biden's last name, Dale Schmidt said. Investigators learned that the only place in the world to buy the Trump-Biden sticker was from an eBay seller. And after, this is just an episode of The Wire. It really is just, this is glorious. And after getting a grand jury subpoena for eBay sales records, police determined that Thomas Howard was the only person in the area who had bought one, said Dale Schmidt. And this is the part, this is just the, after learning Howard's name, Chicago police detectives determined that Howard had been involved in a traffic accident while driving a car with a People's Gas logo on the side. And People's Gas told cops that Howard had been given, quote, multiple coachings about having political discussions at work, according to Dale Schmidt. This is the asshole who voted for Paul Vallis, okay?
Yes, yes.
And there's a lot of him in Chicago.
And he's such a generic white guy.
Yes, he is.
That he cannot be identified.
Right. He's a white guy who's average height, average weight, and he's
average
kind of an
weight,
asshole.
Bald, and kind of an asshole. And there's 50 of them living on your street. Yeah. Yes,
and We tried to track him down by the Paul Vallis sign on his lawn, but there were thousands of those. But there's one goddamn bumper sticker that's only available for one place. This genius picked that one out of all the rest, and he just wouldn't stop. He just wouldn't fucking stop.
I'm sorry. I just can't get over the violent reaction to rainbows. Rainbows are in the Bible, folks.
Yeah, well.
It's God's promise. And it's a silly story. It's one of the silliest stories in the Bible. Mm-hmm. I'm not claiming it to be God's word coming down to earth, okay? I'm not. I'm not a literalist. Literally everything in the Bible's true. But I did go to divinity school, and I'm telling you, the rainbow is supposed to be a symbol of God's love for humanity. after they killed everybody, after he killed everybody with the flood. Okay.
Yeah.
It's a silly story, but the rainbow is supposed to be a nice thing that God did.
Yeah, but the gays messed it all up.
And they ruined the word gay, too. That used to be a nice word. And now it means homosexuality. So,
well, no, a fag used to be a cigarette.
Yeah.
Literally, you know.
Watching
the old World War II movie with British people in it and a cup of fag. Yeah. And that's all. And the gays ruined everything. No.
The gays ruined that word, too?
No. Mr. No. Thomas Howard.
People like Thomas Howard ruined that
they
word
ruined
for
everything.
All the cigarette smokers.
Yeah. Yeah. Sorry, Thomas Howard. And again, it's a silly story, and I don't remember how it
so
crossed
how long
my
is he going to be in jail, I hope?
Oh, I don't need
to. It didn't say.
Who knows? His lawyer, Mr. Taco Penis, says, these charges don't amount to shit. There's no shit here. And then, you know what? He should threaten the judge.
Threaten the judge.
If you're a real
See how that works out for him.
Yeah.
Fly to Florida and then threaten the judge on live television.
Do it. Yeah. Do it. Go ahead. Do
and,
it.
And his wife and family, too. That was fun. The panel of lawyers on Lawrence's show Tuesday night after that speech.
Mm-hmm.
And Lawrence saying, has anyone ever brought up a judge's wife in a speech after he's been arraigned? And they're all like, can't think of one.
I'm thinking just before Judge Roy Bean hung a guy in 1890. Somebody cussed out his whole family. But that's about it. That's about all I can think of.
The rope was already around his neck.
Fuck you and your wife. And that was it. The only other time. Anyway, sorry to get all violent.
Trump ought to have a gag order and be in jail for this. That's all.
Sure, sure.
All right. Drift Class.
Yes.
Each week we post to our Facebook page and website an internet kitty sent in by you, the listeners. This week's internet kitty is RBG, also known as Ruthie B. She is a beautiful white kitty. And I didn't plan this, but I'm serious. In this picture, she is rocking her Rainbow Pride leg warmers.
Goddamn cats ruin everything.
She's a beautiful white kitty with Rainbow Pride leg warmers, and we love her. And of course, Ruthie B eats freshly poured cat food, our fake sponsor. Whether you serve pet store perfection or dollar store dreck, your cats will sit on the kitchen floor and demand that the food they eat is only freshly poured. And Drift Glass, I want you to know, this morning, I opened that can of treats that you bought yesterday, the brand new one.
Yeah.
There is nothing like a brand new can of treats.
No, the cellophane. Just the cellophane. It's
just peeling it off there and everything. And then I sang the song to them. And it goes like this. Freshly poured, freshly poured. Oh, my Lord, it's freshly poured. And you can visit RBG, a.k.a. Ruthie B., at our Facebook page or website. And you can send your internet kitty, dog, or other pet to us at our email address, proleftpodcast@gmail.com, where you can also write to both of us. Feel free to write us. We love hearing from you. Be aware that if you write us at any of our addresses, we reserve the right to read your email or U.S. Postal Service. Go Postal Unions! Letter on the air unless you say otherwise. Don't forget our gourmet coffee guideline. If you can afford to buy an espresso-based beverage for yourself, buy one for us. This is not charity. This is our job. And I can promise you that Lindsey Graham will never be on this show crying that you should send us money.
Really?
No, he won't do that for us.
What about me doing a Lindsey Graham imitation crying on the show?
No, well, you have to get a new blonde hairdo and spray tan to do that.
Yeah, it seems like a lot
but
of
hey,
work.
But hey, listen, if you're one of the, and I would approximate this, if you're one of the 2,500 listeners who listen to the show every week and do not contribute, that's about right. We would appreciate a contribution. And this is a really good time to do it. When everyone's out in their garden, and April and May are always the low month for donations and letters because everybody's getting outside.
Yeah.
So if you'd love lots of attention for your donation or your letter, you're going to get it at this time of year. And see our website, proleftpod.com, for details on how you can do that. Our PayPal and postal address information, everything is there at proleftpod.com. We'd love to hear from you. Please share our show on social media. And if you love this podcast, please get someone else to listen to. And thank you for doing that. Hey, Driftglass, how are the internet kitties doing this week?
Well, look, the internet kitties are fine, and they don't need no stinking blue check.
Let's think about living.
Think about living.
Just think about loving.
Think about loving.
Just think about the hooping and the hopping and the popping and the loving, lovey-dovey. Let's forget about the whining and the crying, the shooting and the dying, and the fellow with the switchblade knife. Let's think about living. Let's think about life.
Professional Left Podcast is recorded under a Creative Commons license, copyright 2023, DGBG Productions.